This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back to the Doctor's Lounge on America's Web Radio. This is Dr. Hal Schurz, and along with my co-host, Dr. Michael Karuchik, we come to you every week to discuss the topics that doctors discuss between themselves on every topic in healthcare imaginable. We let you in on those private discussions so that you'll be armed with the information that you need to fight for your healthcare freedom. This show is sponsored by the Docs for Patient Care Foundation, a non-for-profit tax-deductible organization that was founded by doctors who are deeply concerned with the direction that healthcare is going in. And we offer solutions that are very different from what has been enacted by bureaucrats in Washington who believe that they know better than you do about the kind of healthcare that you should have, who should deliver it to you, and where. This foundation has gone around the country fighting for the healthcare freedom for all Americans and trying to preserve the doctor-patient relationship, which is very much in jeopardy right now. Please go to their website, www.docsforpatientcarefoundation.org. That's www.docs4patientcarefoundation.org, and contribute generously to allow these people to carry on the fight on your behalf. You might not think that you need to get involved with this, but let me assure you that you do. If you're not a patient yet, you will be someday, and you'll need the doctor of your choice there to take care of you when that time comes. Well, if you are a regular listener to our show, you have heard us discuss an array of topics in healthcare about Obamacare, about some of the things that are going on that directly affect your health care, and we give you insight into that and what you need to be talking to people about and holding them accountable for. And today's topic is a little bit different, but it's no less important, and it affects every individual, and it's something that my guest today will, who's an expert in this topic, will be able to inform you, the listeners, about. It seems like it might be something that's a little bit in the weeds. We're going to talk about certification of doctors, maintenance of that certification. And to speak about this today is my guest, Paul Kempin, who is a anesthesiologist who has taken the mantle of this fight, of this issue, and taking it into the belly of the beast against the organizations that have created this incredibly onerous and difficult problem. Dr. Kempin has been in academic medicine, so he is somebody who has seen things a little bit differently than many of the people that you've heard on this show who are mostly in private practice. He's worked at the University of Pittsburgh, at Louisiana State University, and most recently at Cleveland Clinic. And now he, too, is in private practice. Dr. Kempin has been active in state politics, and his specialty is medical competency, licensure, and medical regulation. And what I've asked Dr. Kempin to talk about, why I wanted him on the show today, is to talk about a very important issue that every single physician in this country is facing, and I think that all of you need to understand what this issue is, and it's about maintenance of certification. Now, I'm not going to say anything more about it. I'm going to let Dr. Kempin teach everybody about this, because it's an incredibly complex and difficult problem that I know he can break down for us. So, Paul, welcome to the Doctor's Lounge.
Thank you, Al.
Paul, tell us a little bit, first of all, about maintenance, about what this issue is that we're going to talk about today, which is board certification, maintenance of certification, and why this is important to our audience, the general patients who are listening to this show.
Sure. I first got involved with this maintenance of licensure and maintenance of certification issue back in about 2011, so I've been doing this for a number of years. There's this a nonprofit organization out there known as the Federation of State Medical Boards, which is a nonprofit company that tries to represent the state medical boards, but as a nonprofit, the thing people need to know is nonprofit corporations are not necessarily benevolent. They try to make money so that they can pay their bills. And in these medical organizations, because there's so much money in medicine, everyone wants a piece of the pie. And the state medical boards have this private corporation trying to bring their members into their fold so that they can move their products out into the marketplace, being a state medical board regulation. So you're dealing with laws being passed to take advantage of the private nonprofit corporations. And the certification industry is widespread throughout the country. It's amazing where it all goes. I mean, you can't pick up a telephone without looking at the bottom and seeing that UL, Underwriter Laboratories sticker on there. And it just is a certification with no meaning in many ways, shapes, and forms. These things arose out of attempts to protect American markets from foreigners, and that's where a lot of this licensure and board certification as a physician board certified, you take a test, you passed it, and when I first took it, you got a lifelong certificate, and it attested to the fact that you've gone through training and reached a stature of consultant status in your specialty. And this is the way it's been for decades. And the certification industry, the American Board of Medical Specialists, is another nonprofit corporation. And they've gone down the road over the past several decades trying to move forward and develop a system which would be continually used by physicians. And again, it would increase their income and their power as a corporate entity. Again, nonprofit does not mean benevolent necessarily. And they have, back in 1970, tried to introduce a rolling over, a time-limited certification, and they realized physicians weren't interested in this time-limited certification. And they've tried to sell to the public the fact that, well, you know, medicine advances and physicians need to be kept up to date, and the only way to be sure that they're up to date is to test them. And this is a bit of a fallacy, because when you're out there practicing medicine, you have to be up to date, because there's a whole very, very many different federal and state and hospital oversight organizations. I think about 20 of them oversee me every day, from the Drug Enforcement Agency, the Ohio Attorney General. There's the state medical boards, which are legally mandated in every state to ensure that competency and appropriate care is delivered. And so why do we need another, you know, a 24th organization to oversee physicians, when we know that they're already costing $375 million a year on the healthcare budget just to certify people in the first place? So we have private corporations going to Congress, going to state legislatures, trying to introduce legislation that will force physicians to consume their products. And this is called regulatory capture in the economic literature. And regulatory capture is defined as when a special interest goes out and co-opts policymakers or political bodies, i.e. regulatory agencies in particular, to further their own ends, to make people buy their products. And the only market for the product occurs when they pass the laws to make people buy them. Physicians stay competent in their practice, and the real issue is the Internal Medicine Board, the American Board of Internal Medicine, is out there, and they want to test every internal medicine doctor in the whole field of internal medicine, although there are specialists in cardiology, in gastroenterology, of various other, you know, every single organ has a specialist subset. And the real key thing to recognize is if you're going to be testing internists on the whole spectrum of medicine, you're going to be making them cram for the test. We all remember cramming in high school. You know, you'd learn for the test, and then 2 weeks later that you have to move all that knowledge out of your brain because you have to go back to dealing with what you need to know in your daily practice. So if you have primary care physicians dealing with, you know, basic problems of their patients, if they come up against a patient who has an unusual problem, in medicine, the bottom line is you either diagnose or refer and have this patient get the care they need. And a lot of problems in medicine today is the fact that if it's 18% of the gross national product is medicine, who all's earning that money? It's certainly not the 850,000 physicians in the country. We'd all be billionaires and would retire after 1 year if we were taking all that money home. But there's a bunch of other corporations out there. We have pharmaceutical industries. We have drug devices that are being made and developed, and they have their own utility. But these industries are out there selling their products, and these new products necessitate new ways to think about medicine, which may or may not be better, particularly. And if we all watch the evening news is always totally funded by particularly the drug industries. They're selling the new anticoagulants, the Pradaxa, or the Viagra,
Right. If you have an erection more than 4 hours, call your doctor. Right, I think every 4-year-old knows that now.
Right, right. And so there's a lot of marketing going on in medicine, and which brings me back to where did all this board certification come from? It's a marketing ploy. You know, 80, 90 years ago, it was ENT, ears, nose, and throat doctors and ophthalmologists. They were a small specialty, and they decided that they needed to have some sort of, you know, way to show that they're better than the other guys on the one hand.
Then the general surgeons who were doing this.
Well, these were surgeons who started out doing this. They went into the surgical fields, and they wanted to feel better than their other general people out there. And at the same time, licensure came into being. 100 years ago, there were no really state licenses. People went, learned how to do medicine, and started to practice. And as the governments got involved, then oversight became a mandate, and things tended to get expensive over the years through all of the layers upon layers of oversight and hoops to jump. But at any rate, going back to it, they wanted to advertise themselves as being better by being able to say they were certified by some entity that tested them. And, you know, up until 1975, it was unprofessional to advertise yourself. You could list your phone in the Yellow Pages, but you were not supposed to advertise. It was unethical. It was unprofessional. It was sort of like the lawyers being ambulance chasers. That was something that was poo-pooed. So up until that time, there was a need to advertise without advertising, if you knew what I mean. Mm-hmm. And in 75, the Federal Trade Commission got some laws passed. They went to court, and they sued to make it legal now to advertise. And that's why we see so many ads on the TVs around the news every day. And so this whole concept of board certification, it has changed over the years, whereas it was an advertising phenomenon and a way to keep those that are here and keep foreigners or newcomers out of the marketplace. It's developed now into I call it an extortion racket, because these corporations are pushing. They've gone to Congress. They've lobbied Congress. Politics and money go hand in hand. And so they've gotten laws passed under the Obamacare to force physicians to enroll in their programs. Again, it was in the past 2 years ago, it was $375 million. Well, they want to change it all and probably jack it up their total market to the $2.5 billion continuing medical education business out there. Physicians stay up to date on their stuff in many, many ways.
Paul, take a breath. We have a hard break right here, so we're going to leave it at extortion, which is a good place to break, and we'll come back and pick it up from there. This is the Doctor's Lounge on America's Web Radio.
Hello, I'm Dr. Mike Karuchak. Have you ever wondered what doctors talk about amongst themselves? If you do, join us on the Doctor's Lounge and hear the doctors' conversations amongst themselves. Join me and my co-host, Dr. Hal Schertz, every Thursday morning, 8 to 9 a.m.
Don't be hoodwinked by the left, who wants you to believe the fairy tale that we can power America on butterflies, rainbows, and pixie dust. I'm Marita Noon. Get the truth about energy on my show, America's Voice for Energy, only on America's Web Radio.
In 2009, the membership organization Docs for Patient Care was founded. people all around the country wanted to participate in the efforts of this group, and they wanted to join, but they were unable to do so unless they were physicians. It's for this reason that the Docs for Patient Care Foundation was created. Now, everyone can join the fight and become a member of an organization created by doctors for patients, dedicated to fighting for your healthcare freedom and preserving the doctor-patient relationship. While you're at your computer, please go to www.docs4patientcarefoundation.org. That's www.docs4patientcarefoundation.org and make a tax-deductible donation and join the fight along with us. Thank you.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back to the Doctor's Lounge on America's Web Radio. This is Dr. Hal Schurz with my guest, Dr. Paul Kempin. He's an anesthesiologist, formerly from the Cleveland Clinic, now in pain management in West Virginia, and an expert on the topic that we're discussing today, which is board certification, and more specifically, maintenance of certification. And, Paul, I think that you and I first got acquainted about 3 years ago, and you came to one of the Docs for Patient Care meetings and presented some of this data that you're talking about today. And the wow moment for me was when you put up the tax returns of the different board specialties that comprise the ABMS, the American Medical Specialty Boards, and the amount of money that's coming through there and who's getting that money was really the wow moment for me. Can you share that information?
Sure. The various boards, they're all, quote, nonprofit corporations, but over the decades under the federal laws, they are allowed to make some profit to, you know, get their buildings and invest for their future and have money left over for next year to run their budgets. But I guess the real prime example is the American Board of Pediatrics. It's run by a Dr. Stockman who's been doing this for a number of years, and he takes home $1.3 million every year to run this corporation, this nonprofit corporation. And in the years that he's been running it, the maximum income of the corporation has been only $2 million. So he's taken home a lot of money to run a corporation that makes $2 million a year. And if we think about the pediatrician income, they tend to make, you know, maybe, you know, they don't make, I'll just say, they don't make anywhere near that much. And so it's a very onerous tax on physicians.
Some of them are barely able to keep their doors open because so many of them rely on Medicaid, which barely pays their overhead, if that.
Which brings really back to the issue of, to talk about the costs of board certification, it just doesn't cost the doctors. It costs the patients, too. They've developed these very complex programs, which you have to pay for, and when I say the doctor pays for it, somehow it has to come out of the money pie that the patients are paying or the federal government is paying. And, again, the boards went to Congress, and they lobbied Congress to include laws in there which supposedly would pay doctors if they enroll in their programs. And my board, the American Board of Anesthesiology, back in 2010, issued a statement basically saying that the doctors will never get enough money out of this program to even pay for it. So back in 2010, the American Board of Anesthesiology said, we're not even going to participate in this because it's going to be just an expense and nothing more. And the whole concept of this being funded by federal dollars, well, the taxpayer pays. And it's not only a monetary cost, but doctors, you know, we work 24/7, 365 days a year when we're out there in private practice by ourselves. And the rural practices, these doctors now have to leave their small town, fly up to Chicago or Philadelphia, spend a week, do these courses, spend their money, spend their time. It cuts into their family life. It cuts into the time that they can spend with their patients because they're now away. And if you're a single private practice doctor in small town America, and there's an awful lot of small town America out there where they need their doctors, patients can undergo detriment because their doctor's not there. That's just one side of it. The other side of it, I think this is a very important example, is one of the things the boards are forcing doctors to do is to do research on their patients in their care and document that they're continually improving their care. Well, I take the example always of diabetes, because pretty much everybody knows what that is. You know, they want to keep their blood sugars in control, and there's now a study out there that you can take a sample of blood and determine what the average blood sugar was the last 3 months by drawing some blood. And if it's high, then the doctors would take 40 or 60 patients this month, start changing their care, usually make them take more drugs, come see the doctors more often. That's expense for the patient or the patient's insurance. But always nowadays, there's always a copay, so the patients are going to be paying more, which is not really perhaps so bad because you might improve their care. But if you're trying to reduce the average blood sugar in your patients, well, take example of John Doe. His sugar goes down way low while he's driving his car. He goes off the road, hits a tree, and dies. You know, that's a bad outcome, but that will never show up in these practice improvement modules. We have a situation where these private corporations, through federal legislation, are forcing doctors to experiment on patients without their informed consent, where the patients carry all the costs and all the detriment should it occur. And that's not what medicine is all about. Hal, you know, it's always been the patient-physician relationship. That was the key thing. Well, now insurance companies own the patients and tell them where they can go to see the doctors. And the federal government gets involved in this, too. And pretty soon they're going to start telling doctors what you can and cannot do for patients. And we're going to corrupt care from the individual being the important thing to some, well,
societal
standards, whereby
norm.
Guidelines and standards are basically expert opinions, and the experts writing the guidelines tend to be employed by either drug or political entities with an agenda of their own.
Okay, so I want to just kind of take a step back, because there are three concepts that are on the table. There's board certification, there's recertification, and then there's maintenance of certification. Those are the three different issues. And you're not against having doctors be judged or take a test and pass and show competency in a particular discipline in medicine. That's not what we're talking about.
No. I think, you know, the board certification, it arose because of a need to validate training programs throughout the United States. I mean, you know, 50 years ago, there was a lot less oversight of training of physicians from what there is now. And a lot of physicians came in from abroad, so there was a need to test physicians to see that they met a standard. And this is where these tests came into being. But we know, like the SAT tests for college, it can be a good measure, but even now we see that there's
flaws.
Problems with designing tests to really measure what they should, so that many universities are stepping back from the SAT tests. And again, there's over 163 different certifications that can be issued under this mother corporation of the American boards.
Right.
And so they're not standard by any measure, but they can cause people in training to look at their educational process as being not a little more than just on the job training. It is an educational process, and it is validated by these tests. But recertification is a arbitrary system that has been devised by the corporation for the corporate purposes. They always say it's there to protect the patients, but there's never been a physician who's been taken out of work because of his certification. The state medical boards do that. They, it's a matter of licensure. So this is an overlay that is totally superfluous and really does nothing. And the problem with certification is they went and they started with a 10-year recertification process, and now they're trying to mandate it into a yearly event.
Which is maintenance of certification.
And again, you know, if we think about this in terms of driving licenses, if you said everyone in America had to go every year and take a written test, to be sure that they can be out on the road driving. And if you fail the test, you won't be able to drive until the next test in 3 months. First of all, there'd be a lot of money spent on testing all the Americans. And second of all, there'd be a lot of frustration when people don't pass the test. And the problem with the boards is there's a shortage of doctors. The federal government is trying to meet that shortage by creating new practitioners, nurse practitioners, physicians assistants, who undergo much, much less training, and then give them the right to practice medicine, supposedly under the oversight of a physician, but in many cases that's not even true. So they're dumbing down medicine for the cost of medicine and causing physicians to do more and more and more and become more and more expensive, to the point where they're going to price doctors out of practice. We may not have doctors in 20 years the way this is going. So there's a lot of problems.
And I want to just emphasize that point, where I hate the different designations that are happening right now in society with the wars on the poor, the war on women, all the wars that are being waged. But in a sense, what we're witnessing today is in a way a war on doctors, because the physicians are being over-regulated by the government, now by boards that are in cahoots with not only the government but with insurance companies and hospitals. It's extortion and it's a shakedown, because many doctors can't practice anymore unless they are active and show that they have current board certification.
Well, I think what we're talking about is corporate influence in politics and in daily life. We have hospital corporations, we have insurance corporations, and these are big entities with a lot of money, and money talks in Washington, so they're getting their influence shown in Washington, whereas physicians have usually relied upon their national societies for representation. But in this instance of the corporate board monopoly, the national medical societies in each specialty have aligned themselves with the boards, because they're going to make 2 to 3 to 4 times more money off of this than the boards themselves, because there's all these products, these courses, these things you have to do are going to be sold to physicians, and they're all looking for more revenue. What gets lost in the equation is the patient and, of course, the physician as individuals out there taking care of medical practice on a daily basis. And the corporates, they all have $1 and $2 million incomes or more in many cases, insurance companies as much as $8 million being paid to a CEO. But physicians are out there, they're running a private corporate entity, and they're being pushed out by these conglomerates, forcing doctors to be hired by hospitals. And now doctors are being controlled and medical care is being controlled to the benefit of the corporate entities, and the patients are being lost. And this is something that must be countermanded in our daily lives as Americans, because we're going to be lost down the road in terms of trying to get care we need, because someone's not going to approve it. There'll be some high school graduate looking at a table in an insurance company policy saying, oh, that's not covered, or we don't allow that to be done.
And in the meantime, when the physician who has 30 years experience and just says, no, I'm not going to recertify, won't be able to take care of somebody, and yet a nurse practitioner or a PA who has 6 months of experience can do that very job that the doctor has been doing for a lifetime, and the difference is that they can pay the PA much, much less.
Well, the reality of it is that, I'm an anesthesiologist. We have nurse anesthetists, and in 18 states, they're allowed to practice independently of any physician oversight. Well, they're nurses. They're not doctors. Their education was much less. And, I mean, and anesthesia, one of the things we like to say is
30 seconds.
Life, pardon?
30 seconds. Just
life is pretty safe. But think of Joan Rivers, Did she have the care she needed in a private little place, or are people going to get the care they need from nurses? Nurses do their job well, but sometimes when problems hit the fan, you need someone
They're
who's
not
an
doctors.
Expert.
That's exactly right.
And if you're
going to
get your care, do you want that expert, or do you want just someone who can do the job?
And that's what we'll talk about again in the next segment. We'll get further into it. You're in the Doctor's Lounge on America's Web Radio. In 2009, the membership organization Docs for Patient Care was founded. People all around the country wanted to participate in the efforts of this group, and they wanted to join, but they were unable to do so unless they were physicians. It's for this reason that the Docs for Patient Care Foundation was created. Now, everyone can join the fight and become a member of an organization created by doctors for patients, dedicated to fighting for your healthcare freedom and preserving the doctor-patient relationship. While you're at your computer, please go to www.docsforpatientcarefoundation.org. That's www.docs4patientcarefoundation.org and make a tax-deductible donation and join the fight along with us. Thank you.
With all the back and forth in today's politics, it seems as though the Constitution gets lost in the mix. If you want to brush up on your Constitution, then join Michael Conley every Wednesday from 4 to 5 p.m. for the show Our Constitution on AmericasWebRadio.com.
Hello, I'm Dr. Mike Karuchak. Have you ever wondered what doctors talk about amongst themselves? If you do, join us on the Doctor's Lounge and hear the doctors' conversations amongst themselves. Join me and my co-host, Dr. Hal Schertz, every Thursday morning, 8 to 9 a.m.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com. The pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back to the Doctor's Lounge on America's Web Radio. This is Dr. Hal Schurz with my guest today, Dr. Paul Kempen, and we're talking about a topic that is a little bit out of our usual realm of conversation, and this is the kind of discussion that actually doctors do have amongst themselves in doctors' lounges all around the country. We're talking about maintenance of certification, board certification, things that are affecting your doctors around the country every single day, and something a topic that has become a real hot-button item for physicians around the country, and leading this charge is Dr. Kempen. Paul, we were talking a little bit about, you know, how extensive this issue is. And I said this in the last segment, the wow moment for me when I first heard you present this was When you gave the aggregate amount of money that all the boards in the ABMS have taken in, I don't remember which tax year it was, but the amount of money that they've taken in, and it's essentially a shakedown, and the people, like the person who is in charge of the program for pediatrics and you've written extensively about the people in internal medicine, how much they're making. This is really doctors stealing from other doctors, isn't it?
I would say that's probably not a bad approximation of what's going on. A colleague of mine, Dr. Wes Fisher, as you know, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid has now published online every doctor's income from the federal government last year and the year before. And he went and he researched that out, and he looked at the American Board of Internal Medicine. They publish every year the articles that support their programs, which is a whole new topic. I won't go there at the moment. But he looked at the authors, and he found that overwhelmingly, he, as a practicing physician, he made about $100,000 from the federal government in income, as listed on his website. Whereas these people, their median income of the 31 doctors who've been writing this stuff from Medicare was zero. And, you know, there was a range to that. The point being that the people working for the boards, they don't even practice medicine anymore. They just do administrative work, and they're telling practicing doctors what they need to do to meet their standards, which they believe are the gold standard. And the problem with people not practicing medicine dictating to practicing doctors what they need to know is that it's not real. It's theoretical, and it's probably very far from reality. I think physicians working in their practice, seeing the patients that they see, if they come up and see a patient that they don't really know enough about, they'll refer them out or they'll look deeper in the literature. And the biggest problem for me and other doctors is getting the literature you want. A colleague of mine said back in 1999 from Ohio State University, if physicians would read 2 articles per day out of the 6 million medical articles published annually, in 1 year, they would fall 82 centuries behind in their reading. I think that's a statement. There's a lot of stuff out there you could read, but what's really relevant? There's a lot of stuff that gets published that is meaningless, and that, too, is a big industry. The problem is getting the data to the physicians out there in the practice, and that's what the Internet's all about. It's provided for inexpensive ways to learn and to get continuing medical education. The boards, they want to control that. Over the years, we've always had state medical boards require continuing medical education, CME credits every year, and every state has their requirements. And in Ohio, it was 50 hours a year of education. And the boards are now trying to take over this market. And CME was a $2.5 billion industry back in 2007, and it had been declining because of free online Internet educational products from big centers like Mayo or Cleveland Clinic, but also from drug companies and other places. So the industry was seeing a shrink in profits there, and now the boards, they want to capture that, whereas they've been making $375 million a year, $2.5 billion, they want to go from continuing medical education points to the maintenance of certification points, where they are the sole people who certify the stuff. Now, I know a family practice doc got online, did a module, a continuing medical education module, which could receive credit for MOOC points. And when he contacted his board, they said, well, you send us $800 and we'll recognize your educational product for the MOOC points. It's clearly about the money.
It's a shakedown.
The shakedown. And the shakedown affects patients. We have to come back to the patients,
yes,
too. Because for us to travel to Chicago, I mean, the boards say all of this, first of all, is voluntary, but they passed laws. They have industrial requirements for people to do this stuff. So it is not voluntary for the vast majority of physicians. If you're going to compete, you got to compete on every level. And so the shakedown goes into the not only the lives of the physicians, the cost of the physicians for the products themselves, but when you travel to Chicago, you buy an airplane ticket, you fly there, you got to have a hotel, you got to pay Chicago costs for the meals, and if you're flying from Timbuktu, Iowa, to Chicago, who's going to cover your patients in that little town where you're coming from? So you have to either hire a physician to cover your practice. You tell all your people to go to the ER if there is one, but perhaps you wind up hiring one of these nurse practitioners or physician's assistants to sit there and cover your practice without the medical knowledge of a physician. And these people do their jobs as best they can, and with time they can become quite good at what they're doing, but their basic knowledge is nowhere near what 4 years of college, 4 years of med school, 3 or 4 years of medical training after all the education as residents, and then you go out and practice medicine. We're dumbing down the ability to deliver quality care, and we're subverting it to the whims and the wills of corporate America for profit or for non-profit.
So to put a number on it, to make this tangible for people, how much does it cost a physician on average to just maintain their certification?
Well, you'll hear the boards quote figures like $200 or $300, but when you get down to the cost of actually complying, $4,000 to $5,000 a year is not hard to justify as being the real cost.
So when we're talking about 800,000 doctors, roughly, and how many of them would you say are board certified?
Well, data from the Ohio State Medical Board showed that in 2011, 25% of all physicians in the United States were not board certified. And I want to bring this home. Now that they've turned this into a continuous thing, they were, you know, when I got my first certificate, it was good for life. I recertified in 2005 because as a university-based physician, I felt obliged
to
recertify because
to.
Of the pressures, and I did that, and I got a 10-year certificate. And now it's going to, they're printing these things up, and they put right on the certificate, and I'm going to quote it, that these things are valid for 10 years, contingent upon participation in and completion of maintenance of certification. So every year you have to go back to the boards, show them whatever it is they want to see to say that you're in their program and pay for it, or you will it won't last for 10 years. It'll be gone from one day to the next. And if you're working at a hospital that requires you to be certified from one day to the next, your patient's going to be without a doctor. Hmm. That's a problem.
It's a huge problem. But, you know, when we're talking about, you're saying anywhere from $2,000 to $4,000 per doctor, and if 75% of the 800,000 doctors, which would be 600,000 doctors, are doing this, then we're talking about an industry that is over $1 trillion.
Yes.
It's these numbers are staggering, and I think that this is an important this is what's important for people to understand. We're not talking about inconsequential numbers, and so when you've got money like this, there's a lot of people who are going to make decisions that are not based on what's right for patients or for doctors, but based on what's right for their pocketbook.
For their bottom line.
That's exactly.
And the frightening thing about it is, and I've quoted the American boards, and I'm going to quote it to you here. They stated in their website online, fact, the board recognizes that regardless of the profession, whether it's healthcare, law enforcement, education, or accounting, there is no certification that guarantees performance or positive outcomes. Now, there is one. It's called the Good Housekeeping Seal of Approval, because if you get the Good Housekeeping Seal of Approval on your stuff, if the person buying it doesn't like it, he gets his money back. There's no such thing for any other certificates throughout the country to date.
Maybe doctors should go to Good Housekeeping instead of the boards.
Maybe they should, or maybe it's time for America to realize that there's this monkey on the back of all corporate America. I mean, you want to sell your washing machine, you want to sell your refrigerator, you've got to pay this tax to Underwriter Laboratories, or there's a whole slew of certification industries. If you drive a crane, if you're a nurse, if you're a certified public accountant, if you're, you know, even lawyers get certified, but they do it once. They don't do it every freaking year.
Well, could you imagine if lawyers were under the same kind of regulatory burden that physicians are? This we would lose this problem in a heartbeat. It would go away.
They wouldn't stand for it. They would sue. And I think that's important to mention, the fact that physicians are coming together, and there is a lawsuit against the boards that this is. It's a restraint of trade issue. The FTC may have to get in. The Federal Trade Commission may have to get involved. There are other issues with falsifying statements in interstate transport things. It's a mafia. It's a certification mafia, and mafia extortion is never good. Physicians want to learn. Physicians want to keep up. And it's adult education. They know what they need to learn, and they will go and they will learn that. For the boards to stand there and we're going to treat you like a high school kid and say you have to know everything in your field, let's take it back to the lawyers, because people understand that. You have business law, you have international law, you have divorce law, you have criminal law. And criminal lawyers only deal with criminal law. Do they need to go back and study corporate business law every 5 years or regurgitate? No. You want a guy who's good with criminal law if you're in trouble. And the same is true for physicians. You want generalists who understand the general stuff, and specialists who, when you have that weird disease, they will refer you out to get the care from someone who specializes in that and keeps up on that because that's his interest.
Right.
Adult education, forcing people to cram, to regurgitate, has no use. We all understood that from high school.
Okay, well, you know, we've got one more segment. We're going to wrap this up and tie it all together and this has been a fascinating subject. You're in the Doctor's Lounge on America's Web Radio.
Hello, I'm Dr. Mike Karuchak. Have you ever wondered what doctors talk about amongst themselves? If you do, join us on the Doctor's Lounge and hear the doctors' conversations amongst themselves. Join me and my co-host, Dr. Hal Schertz, every Thursday morning, 8 to 9 a.m.
In 2009, the membership organization Docs for Patient Care was founded. People all around the country wanted to participate in the efforts of this group, and they wanted to join, but they were unable to do so unless they were physicians. It's for this reason that the Docs for Patient Care Foundation was created. Now, everyone can join the fight and become a member of an organization created by doctors for patients, dedicated to fighting for your healthcare freedom and preserving the doctor-patient relationship. While you're at your computer, please go to www.docs4patientcarefoundation.org. That's www.docs4patientcarefoundation.org and make a tax-deductible donation and join the fight along with us. Thank you.
You're listening to americaswebradio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
We're going to wrap up our show in the Doctor's Lounge today with my guest, Paul Kempin. Paul, you know, when I'm involved in as an expert witness for legal matters, the attorneys always telling me that when doctors are suing doctors or doctors are fighting doctors, people really don't have much sympathy, you know, because all these doctors are rich and all these doctors are, you know, they're powerful and smart and people can't connect with them. Isn't what we're talking about today a doctor versus doctor kind of thing?
Well, it's people who have doctor degrees who don't practice medicine. They practice business. These are people who work for corporations and as administrative entities. And they see, they're out there telling the public, doctors need to be checked and tested because they might be incompetent. But there is no problem with incompetency when you look at the state medical board's reviews as to why doctors get in trouble. It's typically the fact comes back to when you get medical care is dangerous. I like to say, going back to the car analogy, if I were to take my car to a mechanic and it was in the same state of affairs as 50% of my patients, the mechanic would say, you better junk this and buy a new one. Well, we can't junk patients. So we're dealing with some really sick patients a lot of times. And anesthesia, we say we put people to sleep. That's what I do for a living. Sleep is a euphemism. We take people to death's door. We let surgeons do things that would be illegal under any other circumstances, wake them up, send them home with no pain or no nausea. That's not science. That's magic, okay? And things will go bad. And I think if we really want to do justice for the general population, we have to emphasize the fact that medicine is a dangerous event, and the boards, they're going to correlate it to airline traffic and atomic reactors where people get tested on an annual basis. But again, if they were flying the patients that I take care of or running the atomic reactors that were in the same state of affairs as my patients, we'd have trouble all the time. And medicine is inherently dangerous. I mean, it's not like flying a plane. It's like strapping a rocket to your back and trying to go to the moon. It's an inherently dangerous thing.
And it's an art.
It's an art. It's a science. And if you're going to start flying to the moon with a rocket on your back, do you want someone who had 2 years of graduate education, i.e. a nurse, taking care of you? Or would you like someone who's gone the whole route and decided to invest 12 years of their life in educating to be able to take care of you? I think I'd prefer maybe to have a little of both. Four eyes are better than only two, and when I take people in the operating room, I recommend the anesthesia team for that reason, because each one of us, the nurse, anesthetist, and the physician, have a role in your care, and I don't think we want to skimp when you're going to death's door.
No. You know, the problem with health care, you've been, you know, fighting this battle and others, as have I and many of our friends and colleagues. You know, the government has made this one of their cause celebs of our time about getting the cost of medicine down and making it better for people. And in this era of medicine being so expensive, we're closing in on this being a $3 trillion annual economy, and we haven't even factored in what we just talked about before, which is that with 600,000 doctors having to recertify, this being alone $1 trillion that isn't even being counted against the cost of medicine, but yet isn't what we're really talking about something that's just driving costs through the roof for everybody?
Well, yes, we are, and the problem is that, as you know, in Washington, laws get passed, and there's always more and more agencies and more things people have to do. They never take away the ones that didn't prove to be useful. There's always just more and more expense, and we need to start looking at layers upon layers of oversight as being a monkey on the back of the American taxpayer, and it's time to start sending these monkeys back to wherever they came from.
Yeah.
So the issues are, again, these boards are run by doctors to a portion, but they're people who don't even practice medicine.
Doctors in name only with MDs after their
name. Right. They got the job on the board because they were physicians, but they've been in academic or administrative roles for years to move up the ladder to get in there. And they're out there selling to the public that we need to control the doctors who actually practice medicine and test them on everything in sight because it's good for their bottom line. But the reality is they can see this as being such a fearful thing because they look at their own life and they say, gee, I don't really know how to do that.
Right.
Because I never do it.
Yeah.
But we're out there practicing, doing it every day, passing the test every day on every patient we see, because if we don't, the malpractice lawyers will be after us, the hospital administration is overseeing us, the Drug Enforcement Agency, the state medical board. There's like 20 people looking over my shoulder every day, and the boards have the gall to say that they are the gold standard in determining whether I meet the quality of care that my patients need. My patients see it every day when they go home that they had a good anesthetic, and again, a perfect anesthetic is hard to give because there's all this intrinsic problems that they bring with them and the nature of the game.
No, a perfect anesthetic is when they wake up from their procedure and they're better than they were before.
Exactly. And we do that every day by and large. Anesthesia is one of the most dangerous specialties in the country, but has one of the highest safety records because of the investments we've made in monitoring and in care and using nurse and physician care in delivering quality to the
patient.
The whole concept of all this overlays by the federal government is designed to find ways to not pay physicians and hospitals for the care they deliver. They always want to find ways to get out of it.
Right.
And that's what all this regulation is about, is to cut the cost to the government and force people to do more for less.
Right.
And we know how that works.
And we've talked about that very often on this show and why people need to take their health care matters into their own hands and get it out of the third party. Paul, we've got just, you know, a few minutes left in the show, and I want you to just tell the audience what has been done to fight maintenance certification around the country, and what do we have to look forward to, hopefully?
Okay. Well, I and one other physician in Ohio picked up this banner back in 2011, 2012, took it to the state medical board, and we put a stop in Ohio on requiring this for licensure and hospital privileges, things like that. There are currently 15 states that have gone down this road that have state organizations have gotten together and gone to the medical boards and pushed. The American College of Physicians has come out and spoken against this. Many other state societies have done that. There are other national societies, particularly the American Association of Physicians and Surgeons with their lawsuit are going to make headway. The American Academy of Sleep Medicine has spoken out. People are starting to speak out because in 2015, these federal mandates are coming to the surface as a 2% tax for every physician who delivers care to Medicare and Medicaid, which brings me to the other big concern. Medicare and Medicaid don't pay well. Physicians are already backing out of providing care to that population. And if the federal government continues to cut funding to physicians for these elderly and needy patients, doctors are going to just back right out, and you're going to find these people getting their care at Walmart. And right. Walmart is going into medical care, and Lord knows they're not going to be staffing those clinics with physicians.
They really are going into medical care for the audience's benefit. They're opening up clinics around the country which are intended to undercut medical costs around the country to bring people into their stores.
Exactly. And that's why I made that reference. We're going to dumb down medical health care to a $10 visit no matter what. And, you know, the quality of the person making the medical decisions, I don't know what that will be in 5 years.
Paul, how can people find out more about what you are working on?
They would have to go to changeboardresearch.com. There's just a plethora of literature there. They talk to your doctor, ask him if he's board certified and what he thinks of this whole MOC process, and you will hear that people are not happy with it. And we need to get the population involved at large to speak to their legislators. But first of all, they have to realize that this is costing everybody an awful lot of money for absolutely zero benefit.
Absolutely. Well, you know, this is a way that people can take back health care and get control of their own health care needs. And it has spiraled out of control for way too long. And this is just another one of the fronts that we're fighting as physicians who are concerned about our patients. Paul, we really appreciate you being on today. And you have 2 minutes to just give us your last parting thought.
Well, what should a patient do? I'll say there's three things everyone should do: quit smoking, get off the couch, and exercise. That's the goal to getting into a lifestyle that will help keep you healthy. You can buy a lot of health care, but you can't buy health. You've got to maintain it, and you have to maintain it. Certainly get your doctor involved whenever you have any questions about how to best do that. You don't want to start lifting weights where you've never done anything for 20 years. You might just have a heart attack. So work with your physician and do your part to stay healthy, but also do your part to make healthcare in America healthy. Get involved, read up on these topics, and get in line with your physician, talk to them, and be prepared to go to bat at the polls to get rid of nonsense that the federal and the corporate America is pushing upon us in the name of quality without proof. The whole certification thing is completely without proof. They publish, they have an army of people doing research which is meaningless by and large, so they can publish it in these many, many journals and provide, quote, data to suggest. And when these people then go to Washington in the name of the boards, they look important, but they're not physicians, they're bureaucrats doing their part.
So what you've said is very important. Now we have a 114th Congress with a lot of new faces, a lot of new people. Healthcare has been a big part of their platform to get to Washington. So learn about this issue and the other issues that we've talked about on this show week after week, and go to them and demand more from them as far as your health care is concerned. Paul, I want to thank you for a great show. This was superb and very informative, and hopefully we'll get you back here.
Thank you, Hal.
Okay, thank you for being with us today in the Doctor's Lounge on America's Web Radio, and we look forward to having you come back next week with us.
This is America's Web Radio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.